If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I think the people that are around you and support you can make all the difference in the world. And if you're around people that are negative and jealous and all of that, it's going to be a detriment and hurt your success.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Kevin Amos formed Plan Financial Group in 2008 after leaving a small mortgage company as a senior loan officer for residential lending. Kevin has a degree in finance, served 4 years in the Army, and has closed on over 1,100 transactions as a buyer, seller, or private money lender. He has spent more than 14 years as a real estate investor and 10 years in real estate lending. He is the author of The 45-Day Investor and a frequent speaker. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Oh, Sam, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, the pleasure's all mine. I mean, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on. Where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Okay, sounds good. Where did I start? Where I started in the Army. And the interesting thing about the Army is you don't really make very much money. Okay, it's pretty poor, actually. But the good news is you don't have a lot of expenses either. So I was saving some money and I had a little bit of money in the bank. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? So I started reading books about investments. And you know which one I picked up, Sam? Rich Dad.
The Purple Bible.
Poor Dad. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly it. So, you know, then I just started focusing on real estate investments in my education and reading about it. And then I ended up buying a property before I got out. I was just turning 21 and I moved into it, lived there for a few years, moved out and kept it as a rental. So there I was 23 with a rental property and I was making 10-ish grand a month in a year in appreciation. That's what I've seen in the 2 years I owned it. Plus I was making, you know, $400 a month in cash flow. And I'm like, Sam, you know what? Real estate is the asset that's going to make me rich. And that's when I dedicated to it. And I started buying one or two properties a month while I was in college. And then here we are.
One or two properties a month. How were you financing one or two properties a month?
And I was broke. I was like eating top ramen, right? So the way I bought that second property is I was using student loans. I used a student loan for my down payment on a property. And the reason I did that is because I had some GI Bill paying for my school. So I didn't need the student loan. But look, it's a 1% interest rate, tax deductible. It's like free money. So, okay, let's use that for the down payment. And that's how I got my first investment. I moved into it, but I kept my first property. And then I started using lease options, subject tos. I just got real creative trying to learn how can I use other people's money, especially the owner of the property, if they're in a situation where I could help them. So it was really the lease options and the subject to investing that got me going.
That's fascinating. Now, is that the same? Is your business still follow the same model today?
No, and frankly, there's just not enough profit in it. It takes too long to get that profit out. So what I learned about real estate is the passion for me is the hunt and the structure and the negotiation. So when you're thinking about an offer on a property, you're really focusing on how am I going to take this down? What's the financing look like? And that's how you structure your offer. So I started focusing on the financing and became a mortgage broker, which was a complete disaster. That was chaos, right? That was right when the SAFE Act was being implemented and I was having to tell people they're qualified for loan. And then all of a sudden rules change and you're not qualified for loan and they have their dream house under contract. And it just got nuts. So I ended up going into raising private money to fund deals so I could have control of that. That was back in 2006. So that's how I got from lease option subject twos into what I'm doing today.
What's your business look like today?
It's a private money or hard money lender. We're based in Denver. We lend in Denver and in Minnesota, some up in Wisconsin, 100% privately financed. And we help other real estate investors do fix and flips and small real estate developments.
That's really cool. Okay. So you at this point are no longer an active buyer of property. You are strictly on the lending side.
Yeah, that's actually not true. My focus is on Pine Financial, but I'm very active.
Okay.
So we're buying, you know, I'm developing properties myself. I'm buying small apartments and doing that. Condos, single family, whatever I can find. It's tough right now, as you probably know. It's hard to find projects, but now I'm actively looking for projects for myself and I actively invest in other people's projects as well.
That's cool. So you've got a group of investors that, let me, before I just guess at it, just tell me how you structure the deal with your investors on the lending side, like the people that put their money with you so you can lend it out. How does that work?
So it's evolved over time. When I first was getting started, it was just, hey, I found a borrower that wants to do a fix and flip. I found an investor that wants to fund it. I'll charge a little fee. You guys go on your merry way. And then the feedback was, hey, we need some diversification. We need some liquidity. We need smaller investment amounts. So I created a mortgage fund, and that was in 2009. Now I've got four mortgage funds, with the fifth one that's already been submitted to the SEC for approval. And this is a public fund. And we're getting some comments back. So there's been some dialogue between the SEC and my attorney. And it sounds like we're getting very close to having that approved. And so that opens up, you know, what we could do big time, huge, I think, raise limits and a lot less restrictions. I won't be regulated by any one state, since it's all approved by the federal government. So that's how it's evolved now.
Right. And so you said you've done four mortgage funds and you're about to open your fifth.
That's right.
But the previous four were different than the way you're doing it on this?
Yeah. So three of the four were what we call a Reg D. And I'm sure you and most of your listeners understand that, just a private placement memorandum. And so those were all Reg Ds. Now they're limited with, you know, 35 non-accredited investors, and you have raise limits and you have all of these restrictions. So now we've moved from the Reg D into a Reg A. And so this is now our second Reg A.
Got it. So is this a closed-end fund or is it a...
No, it's actually a blind pool, because we don't even know what the loans we're going to do yet. So it's a blind pool and it's opened.
That's really cool. I mean, it kind of unshackles, you know, it unties your hands, I would think, in a lot of ways.
Oh, it's fantastic, Sam. And our investors can get their money back if they want. So if there's ever, you know, working with private investors, sometimes there's a lot of emotion here and things don't go exactly like they expect. There's some conflict. So the way we structure it is, hey, here's your money back. We don't want that drama. And if you're not comfortable, we're not comfortable. Let's just go our separate ways. And the way we've structured it is, there's so many loans coming and going that we have that liquidity.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say, you're going to, in order to have that liquidity to pay investors back, because it not only maybe something's not going right, or that they're not, you know, loving the experience. I mean, life also happens where people just need their money back.
Yeah, that's absolutely true too.
Yeah. I mean, the blessing and the curse of PPMs or private placements is that, you know, it's not liquid. So, you know, you can't make a panic pullout, but at the same time, you also just can't get your money back really easily if you don't need to. But with your scenario, they can get it back.
I guess it all depends on how the sponsor structured it. Now, if you're a single purpose entity, like, you know, you're going to do a syndication on an apartment building or something, that would be true. Right. And we've done some of that as well. But the way we're structuring our current company, it's not. There's no capital calls and there's liquidity.
Right. No, that's super cool. I'm curious. I mean, can you walk us through that process of forming a Reg A fund? Has it been harder, easier? Are there some things you could have done differently or that you would do differently as you've done this?
Yeah, absolutely. The Reg A is very challenging, actually. And when I did that first one, you know, I was getting quotes from the attorneys. And I had an attorney that I've done, you know, all my other offerings and my syndications.
Right.
And you know, I was getting quotes of $40,000, $45,000 to put this together. And I know it's not that expensive if I could figure it out how to do it myself. So I attempted to do it myself. And what I later learned was, this is the first hard money fund that was going in under the new Jobs Act when the SEC implemented that. So I was trying, like, paving a path here. I didn't even know it. And every time I got feedback from the SEC, the rules or the target was moving. Right. And so it was impossible for me to hit it. So then I finally got the attorney involved and we got that one through. So now on the second one, what I learned, hire the attorney.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate reality, I think, that we all come to the conclusion of eventually. It's like, yeah, just pay the professionals.
You just pay it. Yeah, it's expensive, but you know, it's going to make you money. So
yeah. And talk to us about the things that, you, I know we briefly touched on this, that you guys are investing in. You said you're doing some development deals, yeah. Some fixing.
Outside of the Pine Financial, me personally, what I'm investing in is we have done some small developments, townhome developments. So the largest one I've done is 13 units.
Yeah.
That seems a little bit more challenging now because of the cost of construction is so high. But what we're finding is the smaller single family home developments in the suburbs around Denver is a bit more profitable, easier, less risk, all of that. I mean, easy to turn it into a rental property if you need to. I haven't done one yet, but we're looking at that. But I really love investing with my associates and business associates and friends and other people that are out there doing projects that I don't have the time to do. So I'm able to invest with them and earned, you know, the returns I'm looking for.
Right, right. Yeah. So you come in as the capital partner and they get the deals done.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Really cool. What have you seen change in the hard money lending space or the private lending space? Because you guys are obviously the private lenders to a lot of people. So how has that business evolved over the last 4 or 5 years? And do you see any risks in it?
Yeah, I guess there's always risk, but you know, a good hard money lender knows how to mitigate that. But I'll say the biggest change that I've seen over the 4 or 5 years in your example there is pricing. So there's been a lot more competition come in. And I think the reason for that is there's so much uncertainty in other investments that you're seeing more and more money come into real estate. And people want to be on the lending side of real estate because one, it's passive, and two, it's very safe. If a deal goes bad, it's the sponsor or the owners that take the hit. Typically, it's not the lender. So we're seeing lots of money come in. So that's driving prices down.
Right. Yeah. That's driving prices down for you as the lender.
And my investors. Yep.
That's right. Right. Because I mean, what's a typical deal structure look like for you guys now?
Yeah, we're at 2 points in origination and 12%. So a point for your listener is 1% of the loan amount and a fee.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Cause I think I'm just rewinding the tape here a little bit back when I was more active in the single family hard money space. I mean, 4 and 14 was not unheard of.
Right. We started at 4 and 15 and boy, we had a good run there, but things are changing.
Yeah. Things are changing. Right. Yeah. Your points have to come down. That's capitalism in action.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. I mean, you got to stay competitive. So that's really fascinating. I guess maybe as you rewind the tape a little bit here throughout your career, what are some things that you feel like you've done really well that other people should emulate?
Yeah, I think I owe the biggest piece of my success to what can also be a detriment. So we need to keep this in check here, but the ready, fire, aim approach. Mm. And, I've had to learn over time because of the errors and mistakes I've made and the money I've lost on deals, just to be a tad slower. And that's exactly how I operate the hard money lending space. But in my own personal investments, I really just go for it. And especially when I was getting started. Look, I know everybody that's going to get into real estate investments will make mistakes. You will mess up. My thought is, let's just mess up fast. And so we can learn on smaller, easier to digest projects, learn from that, and then move on and then have your success from there. So, the cliche is fail fast, but I really believe that.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Is there any examples or things that come to mind that you'd say, oh man, this is one that I definitely failed on?
Hey, how much time we got here? my very first one, Sam, was a terrible experience. My very first deal outside of, I already had the second property and my first rental, but my first creative real estate deal was a short sale. And I was, following the advice of the coach. I read the books. I listened to the tapes. I did all of that. And what they told me to do was give the guy $3,000 for the deed of his house. So I bought the property, his deed for $3,000. And then I went to try to negotiate the short sale. You know what the bank said? No. The bank said no. I lost $3,000. I didn't have $3,000. I had to borrow that. But look, I got the experience. I made a deal unsuccessfully happen, and I learned from it.
Yeah. And that's, I can think of a lot more expensive lessons.
Sure. I've had more expensive ones too. But that was just the very first one. So, that's one I never forget.
Yeah. And I'm sure at some point along the way that has saved you many times that figure on things you go, wait, no, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to do it this way instead. That's really cool. Yeah. So failing fast. That's a great point. What else we got?
Other things that I attribute my success to?
Yeah. Like what are some things that you've done right that you would say, man, these are some of the either done right or guiding principles that you say, this is some things that you should be emulating in your business.
All right. Yeah, I got another one here. So I really believe that you are a product of the people that are around you. So your network is, they say network is your net worth, that kind of thing. But I think the people that are around you and support you can make all the difference in the world. And if you're around people that are negative and jealous and all of that, it's going to be a detriment and hurt your success. So I think being around positive, successful people is huge. And you can create that. You don't need to just go to the networking meetings and try to latch onto somebody. So what I did was create my own mastermind group because there wasn't anything that was around like that. So I called the most successful people that I knew in real estate, but in different areas of real estate. So a successful wholesaler, CPA, a title person, realtor, you know, landlord, as many as I could get, and the best I could find. And I got a lot of no's, and there was pretty much all no's, but I got five yeses, and we ended up putting together a mastermind group. None of us competed. We all worked together, supported each other. And I learned a lot from that. And then now we, you know, sometimes we'll pay for mastermind groups and peer groups and business groups and that kind of thing. And I don't think there's better money spent, frankly.
That's interesting. So you found, I think that's a really good idea. It's actually a brilliant idea. Find someone in various sectors of the real estate industry and put a mastermind group together. How did you pitch it?
I just called them up and I don't even remember. How did I do that? I was just calling, seriously cold calling them. I don't remember what my script was or if I even had one, but it was, hey, I'm putting together a mastermind group. We're going to meet once a week for breakfast and we're going to hold each other accountable to our success. And I want you to be part of it. And then, you know, we had a little bit of structure and you had goals you had to meet for the next week. And if you didn't, you had to buy breakfast for the group the following week. So
there was some motivation there
to try to be motivation, and it fizzled out. It did fizzle out, but you know, I got some great friends out of it, and you know, it really propelled my business at the time.
Right. No, that's absolutely great. Yeah, and that's one of those things that it's hard to know. I mean, I feel like that's not an overused, but it's you know, masterminds are hard to know which ones to join because you are constantly getting pitched. You know, hey man, join this mastermind group. Well, what's it cost? Well, it's $10,000 to join that group. It's like, well. Okay. I don't know. I haven't quite made that leap yet because I don't know, you know, it just seems like there's a lot of, you know, you can get lost in the weeds accidentally if you don't do it on your own. I kind of like your idea of doing it on your own and then you kind of control the way it works out. So
yeah, that's free, right?
Yeah.
And you keep it small. Like we had five and that was, I think that's really the right number.
Yeah. I mean, in today's, you know, maybe this, I don't know what year this was, but now, I mean, with Zoom meetings and everything else, it just becomes so much easier. Just to jump, I mean, you could do this around the country with five industry professionals.
Yeah, exactly right.
So that's super cool. Okay, let's talk a little about your team. How have you grown team and what has that looked like for you?
So we have a fairly small team in this office here. There's four of us looking for a fifth. And I have one person remote out in Minnesota. So he's the guy on the ground looking at properties, meeting with clients that. And then our office manager, she handles pretty much everything around servicing the loans and the books and the accounting and all of that. She's remote in Texas. So it's a pretty small team, but you know, we're very efficient and we all have dedicated roles. And then we spell all of that out. And then we built a culture around that.
That's fascinating. Yeah. And I guess that's another thing. I mean, if you guys are lending in all these states, you have to have boots on the ground inspecting these properties before you guys lend against them, right?
Yes. Now you could outsource that for sure. I mean, you got to be careful that, you know, you're not getting into some fraud ring or something, but you could have appraisers or inspectors or title companies perform those duties for you.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's true. That's true. And I guess the borrower would front those costs as part of, you know, pre-approval for the loan.
Right.
That is really interesting. So is it just you inside the company or is it you and a partner or how did, I mean, did you partner up along the way? Just do this all on your own?
No, for Pine, it's just me, no partners. I believe in partners though. I just chose not to do that for this company. So a lot of my real estate stuff, I'll bring partners in or I'll join a group of people. So it's not that I have anything against partners, but in this, I didn't need it. And so, you know, a good partnership only works when there's, you know, need from all the sides and value bring from all the sides. And so I just didn't think I needed that for this one.
Right. No, that's cool. That is very cool. And what year did you launch your private lending business?
Yeah, interesting. 2008. So right when the hell was breaking loose, right? So in 2006, I was working with somebody else and she decided that she wanted out because it was getting Bear Stearns collapse, right? So we're like, what the hell's going on? So she says, I don't want to do deals anymore. I want to just teach real estate. That's much safer and easier and all this. So she went to be a guru and I'm a trenches guy. So I started my company at that time.
Right. So you guys started lending right in the middle of when really, I mean, the world was coming unhinged.
Yeah, the storm. We were right in it.
Now that's fascinating. How did you have the courage as you see the wheels coming off the bus? Like, how did you have the courage to keep lending and know that you're doing the right thing? And how did you protect your investors along the way?
Yeah, so we're pretty conservative with the loans, you know, the loan to values, and we were only loaning in that time on small single family stuff. So worst case, we keep them as rental properties. And I have, you know, at that time I had a little over 50 rental units, so I knew how to manage rental properties. So I was prepared if things got really bad and we ended up with a bunch of foreclosures to just keep them in the portfolio and turn this into a little real estate investment company instead of a hard money lending company. But look, there was no failure here. I was going to fail and make mistakes along the way, but the company wasn't going to fail. I was committed to it.
That's super cool. Kevin, I'm impressed with what you've done. Look forward to seeing where you guys go here in the future with these, with your mortgage fund and everything else. This has been super insightful. I do appreciate you taking the time to come on today.
Yeah, Sam, I just really appreciate you and your listeners, and you're doing good things out there.
Oh, appreciate it. Here, let's jump into the final four. The first question is this. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Just freaking do it. Just do it. You know, that's the best slogan ever that Nike came up with. And you're going to mess up, like I said. So go ahead and mess up so that you can go get rich.
Got it. Love it. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
I love spending time around people that are smarter and more successful than me. So I try to do that as much as possible. And it's usually like I like to drink beer. So I'll go have a little happy hour with another successful investor. But I also read every day, and I can't say how important that is either.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Outside of raising my own kids, I have a big, big heart for kids, especially kids that don't have a fighting chance. So I spend a lot of time and put some resources into that. So I sit on the board for the Boys and Girls Club here in Metro Denver. And then I donate to the different organizations that help kids in need.
Right, man. That's super cool. Super cool. Yep. Near and dear to my heart, man. That's awesome. Kevin, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
The best way is pinefinancialgroup.com. You can email me. You're not going to get me on the phone likely, but you will get me through email if you want to email at kevin@pinefinancialgroup.com.
Awesome. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. Certainly appreciate it.
You too, Sam. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.